Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, or different cultures. Today, my visitor is Lila O'Farrell. Lila, a very warm welcome and hi to my Te Ao Radio program.
Tēnā koe.
Lila holds a master's degree in counseling psychology and interfaith theology. She is a senior therapist and mindfulness clinical lead with Tamaki Health, Auckland's largest independent primary health care group, and she is the co-director of Mindful Life Consulting. And with Tamaki Health, Lila has developed a mindfulness and awareness Aotearoa, a mindfulness program that is evidence-based, trauma-informed, and trans-diagnostic. Lila, I understand that you are a New Zealander, but you've spent many years abroad. And you have an interesting career when you think of all the degrees that you have and the different trainings that you've done. And you have degrees also in counseling, psychology, and interfaith theology. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about this?
Yes, certainly. Well, I did spend about 20 years in North America. And when I was a much younger woman in my mid-20s, I was the director of a hospice society in British Columbia. And it was at that time that I began to encounter the grief and loss in my in the patient population, the people that we served. And I became very interested in how people used spirituality as a wonderful resource as they moved toward the end of life. And so this directed me toward chaplaincy as a vocation. And I did a year's clinical pastoral education training, a hospital residency, actually in Yuma, Arizona, very close to the border of the USA and Mexico, and went on to do my master's in interfaith theology. But it was really my hospice work that led me toward mindfulness. And I'll never forget one morning in Canada, the snow was thawing and I was trying to free some peonies from the snow. And I realized that I was worried about a hospice family. And I thought, my goodness, how can I renew and refresh myself and serve others well, you know, if I'm constantly ruminating upon the suffering that I'm witnessing and expected to support and alleviate in some way. And I talked to a woman in my community who said to me, why don't you try mindfulness meditation? She worked with children who had been harmed, and she found that mindfulness assisted her to be present and to care for herself and others. So I did that, and that was the beginning of my mindfulness journey. I found with mindfulness meditation and some associated compassion practices that I was able to manage my thoughts, my feelings more effectively, and to be more present and therefore more helpful for the people I was working with. And so I went on to become a hospice chaplain, and I served in that role for about 6 years. And became really interested in the integration of spirituality and psychology, which you might know is a part of clinical pastoral education, actually. So how could I be of greater service, you know, to the people I was working with? And so the bachelor's and the master's in psychology have assisted me to do that. And alongside of that, I did some training for healthcare professionals with Professor Emeritus John Kabat-Zinn, who was one of the first people to bring mindfulness meditation into the healthcare setting. And so that has also greatly informed my practice.
That was also Northern America.
It was, actually. Yes, that was in the United States at the Omega Institute in Texas that I did that training.
And how come that interfaith is on top of it?
Well, I think I learned in my chaplaincy experience that in today's society, you know, we meet with people of, you know, greatly diverse cultural and religious beliefs. And as a chaplain, it was very important to be able to meet people where they are and to assist them, you know, to strengthen in beliefs that are helpful to them. And so often this meant serving as a liaison, perhaps, you know, between the Catholic Church or the Muslim faith, or simply sitting with someone who considered themselves to be a spiritual being, but not necessarily a religious being. And so I became interested in interreligious dialogue and this way of honoring and being with people of diverse faith without having to take anything from them or without the need to colonize, you know, their spirituality in some way.
That's wonderful. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngaka Wai Ora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Lila Farrell, and Lila is a she invented the program Mindfulness and Awareness Aotearoa, and you're meeting every now and then at our Mercy Spirituality Center.
Yes, it's lovely.
And can you tell us more about this program?
Yes, certainly. When I returned to New Zealand in 2003, I had a really strong desire to integrate mindfulness meditation in healthcare and in the community. And most particularly, I began to do that in about 2010 in primary healthcare in Auckland. And I began to teach mindfulness-based stress reduction. But I noticed that the order of practices and teachings was not quite right for our population, our GP referred population, many of whom had suffered life adversity, perhaps some trauma, perhaps living with social anxiety and so on. And so I've adapted mindfulness-based stress reduction and another evidence-based program, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, so that it's more suitable for a population where people may have experienced trauma and that is disclosed or undisclosed. And also, it's a transdiagnostic program, and so it works well for people who are living with all kinds of concerns, you know, a little bit of stress, a desire for greater peace and calm or well-being, right through to levels of anxiety, depression, and chronic conditions and chronic pain. And in fact, our program has been researched according to a psychometric measure called the Patient Healthcare Questionnaire, and we know that it makes a statistically significant difference for our participants with anxiety, depression, and those chronic conditions. But we've also learned that it's a program that's meaningful to people of diverse cultures, because we're not telling them what to think and do, but rather we're sharing a very experiential program where they have the opportunity to sit, you know, well within themselves and their own experience. And our philosophy is that each one of us is fundamentally whole and well, and yet we all suffer in life. And mindfulness meditation and the associated teachings from psychology and medical science offer a way to be with ourselves and to consider some possibilities that seem meaningful and helpful. And because it's been so successful, Countess Manukau has funded a Te Ao Māori enrichment of our program, Mindfulness and Awareness Aotearoa. And so I'm currently involved in a Marae-based action research project with a group of Māori cultural professionals and experts who have all taken the course and loved it and are helping, are guiding the integration of wisdom from Te Ao Māori.
How many weeks is that course?
The course is 6 weeks long. It's 2.5 hours a session, and then we offer a morning retreat as well.
And that takes place at our Mercy Spirituality Center, or some of them take place at our Spirituality
Center?
Yes,
well, you have such a lovely central location. It's great for people who are coming home from work, you know, to come into the Mercy Center. But we offer the course as well in South, East and West Auckland. So we have actually 8 courses running, as well as our course for our staff. So a lot of our GPs and nurses take the course, and this gives them not only some resources for themselves, but the confidence to refer, you know, into the program. So we have some lovely champions, you know, among our medical professionals for mindfulness as well.
How many people participate in one course?
We can usually take up to 20. We are restricted to our patient population, those that receive care from us, but it is a whānau-based program, and so they'll often bring a support person, a family member. We sometimes have couples in the course, teenagers and parents. We've even had 3 generations at one course, you know, which was very, very lovely.
And in which way are you then working together with Tamaki Health?
Well, I'm a senior therapist with Tamaki Health, and Mindfulness and Awareness Aotearoa is a group program from Tamaki Health, and it's situated within our wellness support team, Afi Atu, Afi Mai. And so we offer a combination of child and adolescent, family and adult therapy, as well as a number of groups, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm. And so you have the GPs who are trained and who refer people to you. Is that right?
So the GPs are meeting people in their clinical practice, and often they will suggest to them that the mindfulness course could be very, very helpful. And so they'll make a referral then, you know, into the course. And some of our doctors have their graduation certificates on their own office walls, and they'll say, you know, to the one they're caring for, oh, you know, I've taken this course and I really think it would benefit you as well. And this is a wonderful kind of humanistic equalizer, I think, you know, that we're all on this human journey together. You know, we all experience stress, and that help is at hand, you know, for all of us.
Yeah. And so you've been practicing mindfulness ever since you were in the mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
And mindfulness recently has become a real buzzword. So people using it a lot. And there are a lot of different ways of defining mindfulness. So how would you define mindfulness?
Mm-hmm. Well, like others, I would probably define it in a number of ways. And I think this is why it can sometimes be challenging for people who seek to understand mindfulness and its applications. And so we are all inherently mindful at times. I'm sure, you know, you would agree that we all practice mindfulness in our daily lives, and it's a common word, you know, in our English language. It really means paying attention, but paying attention in particular ways, you know, just as we have to attend to a relationship or a garden in particular ways, to pay attention mindfully is to pay attention with kindness, with wisdom, with as little self-judgment or judgment of others as possible, but also in a way in which we remember, you know, that we are aware of what is most valuable to us. And so mindfulness in its own nature has a strongly ethical foundation, as well as one that integrates both wisdom and compassion. It is as well a way of meditating, and so a lot of people will be aware of mindfulness through mindfulness meditation, and most particularly the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn and the work of Oxford, Bangor and Exeter universities, who have created mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. So it is a way of paying attention, and actually the English word mindfulness in this context comes from the 19th century century. It's a translation of the Pali word sati, and this refers to a form of mental stability that prevents our attention from being distracted. And so mindfulness meditation involves focusing the mind on a neutral object such as the breath. And this assists us over time to stabilize, focus, and calm the mind so that our awareness can grow. And we might think of our awareness as being that field of our consciousness or being from which we can witness experience. And so through mindfulness meditation and the strengthening of our awareness, we become more able to respond to life, you know, rather than perhaps to react in those knee-jerk emotional habitual ways, you know, that we're all, you know, prone to as human beings, of course. And then again, another definition of mindfulness is that it is an area of study and of really sustained clinical research in psychology, in neuroscience, and in medicine. So a lot of ways, you know, to think about mindfulness, from the simple application of our attention through meditation to a clinical field of study.
There are quite a lot of different approaches on how to become calm and to calm down and to concentrate on the breath. And it's not just the mindfulness, but different schools are teaching it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. And your program seems to be very popular. And as you mentioned, you're recognized by the healthcare system here in New Zealand. And why do you think that it's so interesting, so becoming more and more popular within psychology and healthcare?
Well, since John Kabat-Zinn introduced mindfulness meditation into healthcare, this was in the 1970s in the Chronic Pain Clinic of the Massachusetts Medical Center, there has been so much interest in how it is helpful, and about 30 years now of quite really valid scientific research with control groups and so on that shows that mindfulness meditation is efficacious, that it really does prevent, as I was saying earlier, stress, anxiety, depression, helps people to cope with chronic pain. It has implications in the area of addictions. Mindfulness-based programs can help enormously with that. We know that for children as well as adults, it helps us to manage our emotions and to focus our mind. And so a lot of this research is quite sophisticated. It's through clinical trials of people who are taking mindfulness program. For example, Sarah Lazar is a Harvard-trained neuropsychologist who showed through the use of MRI scans that people's brains changed over the 8 weeks they took the mindfulness-based stress reduction program. And they actually changed in areas related to focus and attention and emotional regulation. So science strongly suggests that mindfulness is helpful. And so this allows us then to bring these practices into a context where we must bring evidence-based practices. And then most importantly, on top of that, our participants are telling us, you know, that they're finding it helpful, you know, that they find that they're calming down, that they're less stressed, that they're able to cope with anxiety, that their relationships are improving. And interestingly, that their spiritual life is often being enriched through the practice of mindfulness meditation. And of course, in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we clearly, you know, have a mandate to offer care that is meaningful for Māori, and that includes the dimension of wairua, and a possibly poor, you know, translation of that in English is the spiritual dimension, but it does encompass so much more than that. And our Māori participants have taught us that, yes, you know, these practices are working for us, that they are freeing and helpful. So I think this is another way you know, that we're encouraged in our setting because we do offer care, particularly in the south of Auckland for many people who are Maori or Pacifica. And it's really like a global village, you know, in the context of one of our programs. And we're seeing that people are coming in. When they hear that mindfulness is based in science, that we're offering it from the perspective of science and in a secular way, and yet its origins are in the contemplative traditions, you know, throughout our world we'll find practices like mindfulness, you know, through our religious traditions. And therefore that if they have one of these, they may find it's strengthened through their own mindfulness practice. They begin to report back to us over time, you know, that this is the case.
I was also wondering, because traditionally most people were connected to some kind of religion or faith. And in, I think that every religion has some quiet time. And when people had the quiet time as part of their life because they were practicing their religion, whatever religion it was, there might not have been as much need as today when many people are very stressed, running around and don't even have time for their spiritual journey. And so there's a higher need today to calm down because they don't have this routine of going to their churches, temples, mosques at a certain time and calming down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you're right. And this brings to mind, actually, one of our participants who was a refugee, and she was very depressed, a Muslim woman who came through the course. And on the last night, she said to our group, I pray to Allah 5 times a day, but since I have been practicing mindfulness, I feel closer to Him. And so we know that there are some particular, you know, aspects of mindfulness that help people to manage their thoughts and their feelings. So one is called meta awareness. And so this is the ability to monitor the contents and the processes of our mind and to be able to report on that. So, for example, we might notice that we're caught up in worrying thoughts, or that we're daydreaming when we could be listening or reading, you know, or doing what we have chosen to do. And so meta-awareness helps us to be aware of this and to redirect our attention. We know that mindfulness assists with what we call present-centered awareness, and that's that ability to bring ourselves into the present moment rather than this kind of mental time traveling, you know, between the past and the future, or being caught up in the concerns of the day. We know that mindfulness fosters non-reactivity to our experience. And so in sitting with ourselves and witnessing, you know, this ever-changing flow of thoughts and emotions, pleasant or unpleasant, we learn how to be with our experience. And so when something difficult arises, we're more able to, you know, to respond to that more effectively. And it also helps with the not rarefying thoughts. And so we start to see that thoughts aren't necessarily facts and we don't have to follow them. And even though our emotions might be really strong, they're not necessarily wise, and it's not wise at times to surrender to them. And so I think, you know, this integration of sitting in the quiet and managing, you know, the contents of our mind naturally leads us into a silence that fosters, you know, our faith or our spiritual orientation or our values orientation.
It's like some people say you have to leave always some space for the Holy Spirit to talk to you. You can plan everything, but you need to have some space for the Holy Spirit. And what you say with mindfulness, when you calm down, when you are thinking things through and not just decide quickly, that's the moment where you allow other thoughts, or you allow your thoughts to be kind of digested.
Absolutely. And I love this this acknowledgement, you know, of the Holy Spirit, of that which is, you know, most sacred to us. And so we might say that mindfulness meditation has a lot in common with the apophatic tradition, which is that seeking of the knowledge of God, you know, through silence. And I know in your own faith, you know much more about this than I, Beate, but this idea of kenosis, of emptying out, of making space for the Holy Spirit, I think this is really complementary, you know, with mindfulness meditation. It's a very similar practice. And so with this emptying out of the self, we are making room for the other. Are
yes.
we not?
Yes. Yeah. And so on the Saturday, the 29th of June, we'll have Linda Gout, who's coming to our center, and she will facilitate a session on mindfulness and Christianity. So you already explained a little bit about how mindfulness can enhance your faith, your religious practices. So how do you see the relationship now between mindfulness and religion or faith?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's exactly as we have been saying, that mindfulness meditation need not detract from anyone's faith orientation. In fact, it can enrich it. And so if we're working in the context, say, let's say a Christian context, there are so many beautiful examples, and I'm sure Linda will be teaching perhaps from the Cloud of Unknowing, the 14th century text that is all about this apophatic way of sitting in silent contemplation and listening, this wordless witnessing, you know, and receptivity to the movement of the Spirit within us. And of course, we call God by many names, you know, don't we? I think from my own interfaith background, I often think of our faith traditions as being like the colors of a rainbow. You know, they're very distinct, and yet they're all made of light. And this is what our participants say, you know, as the people of Hindu and Muslim and Christian and Buddhist and perhaps no faith, you know, sit together. You know, they're very honoring of this.
Do they talk about their faith during your session?
They do, actually. Yes. There's time for inquiry. And I feel grateful for my own background and my comfort level in sitting in a room, you know, of people of diverse faith. I think if our own faith is not mature, we can find that threatening. But from an interfaith perspective, we're not trying to make some kind of porridge out of, you know, everyone's tradition. It's not a syncretic approach, yeah. You know, but rather, you know, we're honoring that distinctness. But what we see, what we feel, I think, when we're together is love and compassion and tolerance and a real curiosity.
Thank you very much, Laila. Mm-hmm. These are wonderful words to end the interview with, love and curiosity and compassion. Thank you so much for your work.
You're welcome.
And thank you
for
coming to the studio. And what is coming up at the Mercy Spirituality Center? Well, on today, Friday the 21st of June, from 7 to 9 p.m., we'll have Rangi Davis at our center, and she will give a presentation on Maori spirituality, Whakawhitai, gratitude. Please note that this presentation will be interpreted into New Zealand Sign Language. And on Saturday the 29th of June from 9:30 to 4 p.m., Margaret Bowater will facilitate a workshop on inspirational dreams and visions. The same day, same time, Linda Gao will come and she will give an introduction into mindfulness and Christianity. And we mentioned that during our interview, mindfulness and Christianity. On the 1st of July, we will start with our series on Living Gratefully with Sister Helen Bergen. The series consists of three sessions, which are held on Mondays, 10:30 to 12:30, and they're held on the 1st, the 8th, and the 15th of July. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a good Friday and a blessed week ahead, and thank you very much, Laila, for having come.
Thank you.